Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to see you and to see a new face. Welcome, welcome. So we are in the parsha of Ve'etchanan. He pleaded, and we're talking about Moshe. And the title of my talk is, I have to find it again. This little screen, there's so many things. There it is. Moshe could not see that he had already arrived. Okay, that's the title. Moshe could not see that he had already arrived. So now we're a couple of days after the holy day of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av. We officially enter a collective spiritual journey together. For the next 7 weeks, we'll practice teshuva, turning, returning, and being turned toward this unfolding of being. In 7 weeks, we will enter the gates of the high holidays, or the high holy days, with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And according to Rabbi Alan Liu, may his memory be a blessing, Tisha B'Av is when we remember our estrangement from God. And that's the beginning of the process of teshuva, to return. For me, that means we have 7 weeks to yearn, to cry, to call out. 7 weeks to deepen our experience of how our lives depend on reconnecting with the divine flow, which, of course, is the heart of our practice. Last week, in the first parasha of Deuteronomy, I relayed Moshe's words when he recounts to the people their 40-year journey together. Moshe complains that the people have been bickering, a bickering burden to him. Sometimes I feel like my inner voices are a bickering burden to me. But alas, in that moment, he has no idea that the burden is about to lift and that it will break his heart. Because in this week's parasha, he finds out that his work is done, finished. He is not to go into the land of promise. God tells him definitively, you will not enter the promised land. I mean, has anything ever sounded so unfair? So the name of the parasha is fitting. Ve'etchanan means he pleaded, or maybe it must be I pleaded, because this is the book that's in Moshe's own words. I pleaded with Havaya, Be'et Ha'hu, in this moment, crying out, Oh, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, you who let your servant see the first words of your greatness, your might. You whose powerful deed no God in heaven or on earth can equal. That was an amazing line to me because I realized that they still understand the world in terms of many gods in the sky and in the earth. Just kind of cool. You whose powerful deed no God in heaven or earth can equal. So, and he continues, let me, I pray, cross over and see the good land on the other side of the Jordan, that good hill country and the Lebanon. But God immediately tells him, on no uncertain terms, no way, Moshe. Even though you have taken the people out of the narrow places of Mitzrayim and guided them through 40 years in the desert sands, and have put all your mind, heart, body, breath in service to getting the Israelites to a land of promise, no. You cannot enter the land of promise. And certainly not when you're pining for something you cannot have and feeling unfairly mistreated when your deepest hopes and expectations have been dashed. This dashing of the deepest hopes for the Israelites sounds a lot like the world I live in. Whether it's personal, whether it's collective, there's this daily news feed, internally, externally, that each day dashes my hope to enter a land of promise or sanity or care for the other, dashes my hope for a place where people stop destroying the earth, sea, sky, with pervasive, unchecked greed, hatred, delusion. So Moshe now turns to the people he's been shepherding and blames them. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was wrathful with me on your account. So I have to ask each of you and myself, have you ever noticed blaming yourself or blaming others for what you could not get or make happen or prevent or desperately wanted? Yes, so Moshe says, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh would not listen to me and said to me, enough, never speak to me of this matter again. Whoa, that's pretty definitive. Wow. So Ve'etchanan, Moshe pleaded, is always the parasha that follows Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, we let ourselves feel, embody this total brokenness and the collapse of everything we hold dear, everything we've worked hard to manifest in the course of a lifetime, and in community together over the course of countless lifetimes. And I posit that, like all our holidays, that this practice teaches that without letting in the brokenness, without a chance to feel and express our grief, there can't be a rebuilding or a new learning about how to live this brief, brief life. So now we're in the book of Deuteronomy, this last and fifth book of Torah that is literally the second telling, the meaning of the word Deuteronomy. And Moshe recounts in his own voice the adventures of birthing a Jewish people that will become a nation. That word nation is curious to me, because in our postmodern parlance, nation mostly indicates a political entity whose borders include some folks and exclude others. And as a historian, I can officially attest to the fact that there's no example of a nation whose borders are not problematic, leaving out some people who feel they should be in it, and including some people who think they should be outside of it. So borders are often artificial and historically ephemeral. And so much of the Israelites' journey is to try to cultivate recognition that there is some kind of God-given eternal connection. In Deuteronomy, Moshe speaks in his own words the details of what God has taught the people. He reminds them of all the laws and rules that will enable them to live as a free people in a new land. Moshe's plea illuminates for me an aspect of my practice that has been hidden from me. It made me realize that one of the things that undergirds my meditation practice is that there's an underlying pleading, often unacknowledged. My act of commitment to sit still, to come back to this breath and body, to return to the essential reality of being alive, moment after moment, day after day, year after year, and perhaps lifetime after lifetime, has a kind of hidden plea. Yes, this world and life is overwhelming, ornery, scary, and basically totally beyond my control, beyond my comprehension, for sure. And it does not conform to my preferences. Please, 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 Let me go to see what is beyond this unintelligible, narrow self. Please release me from the narrow place that feels lonely, because I am a unique subject to the rest of the entire universe's infinite objects. Where is there comfort if our lives are like dust, with this aliveness a mere blink of the eye? Nothing like me has ever existed and never will. Please let me experience a wider, interconnected flow of all being. Please take me beyond my narrow, defensive sense of being a separate, solid self. So now we are in the 7 weeks of Teshuvah, and please let me turn towards this divine flow of life. Let me fully enter into the brokenheartedness that may lead to openheartedness. Help me face the suffering within me and around me and throughout the world in ways that can nurture a heart of compassion in the midst of so many attacks on and collapse of what is good. Starting with Tisha B'Av, our tradition gives us a break from having to be strong with it all, of trying to stay positive, visionary, activist. So once V'et Hanan helped me to see this underlying, unacknowledged pleading in my practice, it was obvious. We need all the help we can get. There was a period of time, not too long ago, that every night when I got into bed, I lay my head down on the pillow and I clicked on my phone to listen to a Dharma talk that would take just enough edge off the anxiety of this delusion of being a separate self and the burden and the bickering that comes with that turf. And the talks would communicate in so many different ways that we are not only separate selves, but also deeply interconnected. And these talks mitigated for a few moments the burden of schlepping around a false construct of identity. The talks were so reassuring that I seldom heard them for more than 5 minutes before falling asleep. That's Dharma talks as great drugs. In Torah Journeys, Rabbi Shefa Gold writes, when Moses implores God to allow him to enter the promised land, God's response is interpreted by Moshe as an angry and terrible no, a withholding of grace. And I would add that in our meditation practice, we practice with this aversion. We sit with so many terrible no's. No, no, no. This is not the moment or the world that I ordered. Meeting that aversion with kindness turns it into a path of liberation, of radical acceptance and compassion. And it reminds me of my teacher, Shoshana Cooper, who once said, "My path is the path of disappointment." Like that. My path is the path of disappointment. So I think that means that to the extent to which Moshe can't change the disappointment, demands that he can be with the heart-wrenching disappointment of not being able to fulfill his deepest longing and his incredible practice of leading the people with this deep longing to enter the land of liberation. So God answers Moshe's disappointment with, Rav Lach, you have so much. Stop fixating on your idea of what you long for and instead see what you already have and have become. Your relationship with your people and with me, your God, is everlasting. Everlasting. And here's the title of our talk. Moshe couldn't see that he had already arrived. By his fortitude by his dedication, by his discipline to not turn away from suffering, his own and his people's, he has entered a promised land, if not the promised land. And so God tells Moses to climb up a mountain and lift his eyes. He is being invited to receive a glimpse of the promised land, the land of new, unknowable possibilities, which for us we could say is always the next moment, if we can open to it and greet it with awareness. Let it rest in awareness. From the summit of this mountain, everything that we thought separate, all of the opposites that had warred within us, are suddenly united. It's all echad, one. Then the fullness of love that is always there can flow, can be given, can be received. Then you shall love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. This prayer that we repeat every time we pray appears in this parasha. And Shefa writes that when we experience the knowledge of the unity behind the duality, it takes root in us, and we become lovers of the highest order. V'yet Hanan offers us the challenge of transforming the power of desire from a potential prison into a vehicle for enlightenment. Each of us must climb the mountain of our own desires, and probably, I would add, our own aversions, and lift our eyes to see beyond what you and I have come to expect or imagine. I think that everything you see is exactly what you need to awaken, to crack open the places where you're still numb or yearning for something or pushing something away. Instead of trying to think our way out of the pain of the tight places, we can bring some love, some patience, over and over again to what is hard, and drop into direct experience. Ah, it's exactly like this right now, in body, heart, mind, spirit, all words that really aren't separate, but describing different angles into that connection. Shefa writes, lift your eyes beyond your own limited expectations, climb the mountain to take in the wide expanse. You don't need to cross the Jordan. You are already home. You are already home. Yes, Shefa, we take this journey of our lives in order for our eyes to open. Moshe is too distressed to see Be'et HaHu in this moment, like I am often too distressed to see Be'et HaHu in this moment, that there is no place to get to. Perhaps you could say his whole life, all its circumstances, have been bringing him into a land of promise all along. But in this moment, he cannot see that he has already arrived and has been arriving in each moment of his amazing life. Perhaps there's a poignant joke that's on Moshe and on each of us, that only by bringing love to our longing for a better outcome, bringing love to our wish for a different life, a better world, a different spouse, a different body, a different diagnosis, etc., can we arrive in a land of promise. And really, this is the heart of Teshuvah, turning to what is. And it enables us to act in ways that align with our deepest human vision. Perhaps only in that moment, when we stop trying to alter this life, Can we transform what actually occurs? It's so awkward to be a living human being with eons of evolutionary and ancestral baggage. And in a paradoxical way, then, it is this very estrangement, this wanting and not wanting, this wish to enter a land of promise, that drive both my underlying pleading and my commitment to return and return again to this living, fleeting moment with a bit more love and compassion and patience and perspective. So thank you for your kind attention. We'll sit for a moment and then we'll open it to your pleadings, your insights, your wondering, how your practice is going, what's happening, baby. So let's be quiet.